more.
Good evening, everyone. Try that again. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City of Arroyo Grande. This is our City Council meeting, and it is Tuesday, June 24th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute, and the agenda says that I was going to do the flag salute, but we have another volunteer this evening. Riley is here from Boy Scout Troop 413 to lead us in the flag salute. If you would please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Ron D. from the Harvest Bible Church is here to do that for us. Riley, would you like to come up to the podium and start us on our flag salute?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Won't you join me as we ask for God's help tonight? Heavenly Father, we come to you, and Lord, we know that by your mighty power and outstretched arm, you created the heavens and the earth, and there's nothing too hard for you. And in the words of King Solomon, he said that preparation is in the heart of man, but the answer comes from the Lord. And even as our city council and staff have prepared themselves for tonight, they've studied and they're ready. But Lord, that the answer that they give, the decisions that they make, the concern, the welfare of our city and the people of our city of Arroyo Grande, Lord, that that answer would ultimately come from you. Lord, we want to honor you. We want to invite you to be a part of just the daily affairs of the city of Arroyo Grande. This, Lord, be with us tonight, and Father, be with our city, we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Ron. Appreciate it. Riley, don't rush off. See, what comes with volunteering is we get to hear some of the activities that your troop has been involved in. Anything you'd like to say about the Scouts, if you, or you don't have to. It's up to you. Okay? We good to go then? All right. All right. Well, thank you so much for volunteering at the last minute. We appreciate that. Okay, we're going to move on to item 5, agenda review. 5A is closed session announcements. The council did meet in closed session on Tuesday, June the 10th, and took no reportable action at that council meeting, so we have no report out of closed session. 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Moving on to item 6, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on any item that is not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not posted on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as one body. Once again, items not published on this evening's agenda. Community comments and suggestions, anyone who would like to come forward.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, I'm Larry Harlan. I live at 1315 Hillcrest Drive. I come here tonight to implore the council to consider the law of unintended consequences when formulating water policies for the city of Arroyo Grande. Now, while the agenda tonight focuses only on water rates, I believe that in the near future, You will also be considering additional water policies, and if so, please consider the following. As communities and policy bodies throughout the state have found, there are many conundrums that arise and present themselves when considering and addressing the water shortage. Some cities have already enacted policies to address the water shortage problem. For example, Grover Beach recently adopted an inherently unfair and unwise policy requiring a percentage reduction in usage. And this fails to consider several things. First of all, a simple percentage reduction does not consider the fact that some of our good citizens have already, over the many years, taken responsible actions by installing low-flow showerhead toilets. Some of them have even renovated their lawns and have done all things to consider reducing their usage. And they are at a point now where it's almost impossible to reduce it anymore. So those people need to be considered. There are also other considerations to be made. For example, some people, and I can speak from a personal basis on this, have people coming back to live at their homes for a variety of reasons. For example, someone may have lost their employment and are out of work and lost their ability to have housing, so they come and move in with someone. That's going to increase the water usage, so that's not going to be a fair thing for them. For example, there are medical conditions or health issues that require additional water usage, it's going to be difficult to reduce the amount of usage. So there are a good many different things. A new baby in the house, for example, adds to the water usage. There are so many things that would mitigate against just a simple adoption of a percentage reduction in water usage. So I hope that this council will consider the law of unintended consequences. As a further example of that, you recently passed, I believe it was an ordinance, that now increases the amount of money available to those people who renovate their lawn to take out their lawn and use water-saving plants. You went, I think, from 50 cents a square foot to $1 a square foot. Now, what that does, and as far as I know, you've made no attempt to make those people who acted in a civically responsible manner earlier to make them whole with that. So if I'm considering that, am I going to think, well, maybe I'll wait. Maybe it'll go to $1.50, maybe $2. If it gets serious enough, it may even go further. So without your willingness to make those whole who have already done it before in a civic-minded manner, you are invoking the law of unintended consequences by inhibiting some people who might otherwise have done that. So please thoughtfully consider all the ramifications and fairness for all the water policies that you may in the near future be considering. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Much appreciated. Anyone else? Once again, items not on the agenda. Okay, seeing no additional comments, we will close community comments and suggestions, and we will move to the consent agenda. That's item 8. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one motion. Unless there is an item on the consent agenda that a member of the council would like to pull for further clarification, some questions, or perhaps an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on any of the items on the consent agenda. If you're following along this evening, we're going to be addressing consent items 8A through 8I. So this is an invitation to the audience once again, if there's anyone who would like to come forward and comment on any of the consent items. Once again, be mindful of the 3-minute rule. This would be your opportunity. Anyone? 8A through 8I. Okay. Seeing no one, we will bring it to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Are there items to pull? No items? I did have a quick question on 8G, and Jeff, if you could come forward. I just want to clarify, 8G is a consideration of an award of a contract to Apodaca Paving for the construction of the citywide street service repairs, and we're specifically looking at that segment on East Grand Avenue from El Camino to the 101 freeway. And my question to Jeff was, to what extent does that encroach on Caltrans right-of-way? And so I found out more detail about that particular issue. Jeff, could you clarify what our responsibility is and what Caltrans' responsibility is?
Certainly, Mayor Farah and members of the council, Jeff English, Public Works Director. Regarding the section of East Grand that we have included in this contract, the city is responsible for maintenance of the pavement from the bridge deck on East Grand all the way to the city limits on East Grand. We are proposing to do that section that wasn't done last year, essentially from Bennett back to the freeway bridge deck. It does require that we do a closure of the lanes. That's why we have to obtain a Caltrans encroachment permit. We are responsible for the maintenance, and Caltrans will not be participating in any of the cost for this project. But we do have to, since we impact their highway, we do have to get an encroachment permit. The city receives an encroachment permit, and the contractor will also have to receive an encroachment permit to help coordinate those closures.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Thanks. Any questions for Jeff? All right. If there's no other questions on any of the consent items, I'll entertain a motion to
move adoption of the consent agenda.
Items 8A through 8I.
So moved.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Anything to read in there tonight, Tim?
No, Mayor Varr.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. All right, we're going to move to item 9, public hearings. We have three this evening. The first is 9A, consideration of placing a proposed city charter on the ballot at the November 4th, 2014 election. Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. This evening, staff is recommending the city council proceed to place the proposed city charter on the November 4th ballot for consideration by the voters. These recommendations are the result of a lengthy process that has involved six city council public hearings, including this evening, recommendations from a Citizens Advisory Committee board who held seven public meetings, and then a variety of public education materials that were made available to the public. The modifications that have been directed by the city council have all been incorporated into the final proposed document you have before you this evening. Before you for consideration this evening includes, first, a resolution ordering the submission of the measure to the voters. Second, a resolution setting priorities for filing a written argument regarding a city measure and directing the city attorney to prepare an impartial analysis. A third resolution providing for the filing of rebuttal arguments for city measures submitted at municipal elections. For the argument in favor of the measure. And lastly, a request to appropriate an additional $5,000 for additional public information costs, which staff is withdrawing the recommendation for it this evening. We checked back on the original appropriation and the amount we've expended, and we still have about $4,000 there. So we think that's sufficient for the amount of public education work we're going to be doing. So we don't need an additional appropriation this evening. So we withdraw that recommendation. Now, once again, there are two types of cities in California, general law cities and charter cities. Rio Grande is currently a general law city. General law cities operate entirely under the general laws granted by the statutory laws of California. A charter, instead, is a kind of a set of bylaws or a constitution for a city. And the benefit of becoming a charter city is that it grants the city additional authority from the state in areas that have been determined by the courts to be municipal affairs. Probably the most significant area is that it would provide the city more flexibility in handling public works contract procedures in a more cost-efficient manner. Staff also believes there could be benefits to the city in the future. by providing some additional authority to help prevent the state from passing new laws that would take additional revenues from the city if it was in an area that had been determined to be a municipal affair. As you know, the most controversial aspect of charters and charter cities is the issue of prevailing wage. As you also know, the state legislature recently passed SB 7, which prohibited any city from receiving any state funds if they had a provision within their charter that allowed contractors not to pay prevailing wage rates on public works contracts, even if those projects were entirely paid for by local funds. This legislation is now being contested in court. Staff believes it will be struck down due to inconsistencies or conflicts with a recent Supreme Court decision. Therefore, the proposed charter before you for consideration includes a provision that would provide the City Council the authority to establish standards and procedures on when prevailing wage rates would apply on public works contracts, but that provision would only take effect if the provisions of SB 7 are struck down in court. And therefore, there's nothing within the charter that conflicts with SB 7 or the provisions of SB 7. There's nothing within the charter even that prohibits requiring prevailing wage. So there's really no question regarding the charter of whether prevailing wage is a good thing or a bad thing. Really, based on what the provision, how the provision is worded, the only question is whether that decision should be made by the state legislature or should that decision be made by the City Council. And staff believes it should be made by the City Council. It's extremely important, we think, to note again that there are specific provisions in the charter that very clearly spell out that this charter provides no additional authority to the city to increase taxes, increase fees, or increase City Council compensation. So some of the claims made by a recent mailer that went to all Arroyo Grande residents is just simply untrue. Within your packet, the first resolution actually sets forth the proposed language that would be on the ballot. And we developed recommendations on that based on researching other measures from other cities, particularly those with successful measures. However, we have included some options within your staff report to consider also. And the City Council also has the option, if you want to make any modifications to the proposed ballot argument. Keep in mind, though, there are a limit on the number of words that can be included in an argument. We also tried to program into this process some extra time for you, and therefore, if you have any changes you want us to direct us to go back to make, or if you have any additional information or research you want us to provide, the schedule permits that you could delay this to the July 8th meeting, and we could still meet the deadlines for getting the measure on the ballot. So that option is available if it is necessary. However, staff is recommending this evening that the City Council adopt the resolutions we've laid out for you so we can proceed to move forward and put the measure on the ballot. At this point, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Questions for Steve?
I do.
Okay. Go ahead.
Steve, my first question is a simple one. Is the staff report keeps commenting on the SB 7, and yet it's currently the law of the land. Why aren't we referring to it as a current law that might be appealed?
I think in the staff report, or at least in the charter, we do refer to the code section. I think in my comments, just for everybody's understanding, because everybody I think is familiar with SB 7, if you'll note, the way I phrased it was the provisions of SB 7 or the legislation of SB 7. So
I just want to make the, I mean, I've got other questions, but I want to make the comment that it was brought up by opposition to this issue that it's actually currently the law of the land. And I think it's totally respectful to do that, to answer it in the way that it's currently the law of the land. And I want to make decisions based on what the current law is versus what may or may not happen. So, I mean, I understand the point that, you know, our council believes that it's going to be overturned, but I kind of feel like I have to make decisions based on what the current state of affairs is, which leads me to my next question, and that is, and I think I know the answer, but I just want it spelled out publicly, because I've talked to you about this before, is if we get if we put this whole prevailing wage issue aside, which tends to color the outcome of this issue, it just seems to really have an influence, do you believe, as I believe, that it would still be a worthwhile thing to do? And if so, what kind of savings would we get, prevailing wage aside?
Well, yes, I definitely very strongly believe that the city should move forward, and there are other benefits. I'm not sure I'm prepared with any dollar amount savings, but I think clearly the two areas we outlined, and there are a lot of different scenarios that we could come up with in other areas, but I think the two key ones is public works contracting procedures. So aside from the prevailing wage issues, a charter city still has a lot of other flexibility in terms of its public works contracting procedures. And we had a lot of discussion about that during the police building. We got to see exactly some circumstances where if we had been a charter city, we might have been able to handle things differently and could have possibly come up with a less expensive bid on one of those projects. So that's number one. The other thing is the point we made that by putting this in place now, we hope it'll also have a lot of benefits in the future, because the primary goal is very simple, just establishing as much authority from the state as we can and protecting our local control as much as we can. And so not only are there specific identified things we can benefit now, but moving forward, we hope that this will give us some protections as the state's practice is they continue every single session to come up with bills that infringe upon our local control, and we're hoping this will put some things in place that can help protect us against those things. So some of it's proactive, and then some of it's reactive.
Okay, so that gets back to one of the comments you made in the staff report, and that is unfunded mandates, which drive me crazy. They make a mandate, and then they tell us we got to take care of it. And I can't remember the last one. I think it had to do with drainage on properties or something, where we had to appropriate $25,000 to enforce it, even though it wasn't our regulation. Do you believe that by doing this, that we somehow protect ourselves from the state still not being able to mandate unfunded mandates and, you know, takeaways that we've had in the past?
It all comes down to each action by the state and whether it's in an area that's been determined to be a municipal affair or not. So honestly, I would say the majority of actions the state takes, that they're pretty careful about finding a way to make it apply to everybody. But even if it's a small percentage of those, even if it was a few things that came up that protected us, it still could be a huge benefit to us. So once again, the threat by the state to infringe upon local control is so serious, anything we can do to try to give us additional protection and authority, we think we should do that.
Very good. Mr. Mayor, those are my questions.
Okay, thanks.
I did just want to know, both the staff report and the proposed charter itself refer to Labor Code Section 1782, that they don't refer to SB 7, although they do it parenthetically.
I saw them exactly refer to SB 7, so they do both. They do both. And going forward, just so there's no misunderstanding, I think we should stop talking about what was history and talk about what is current, and what is current is legislation which may or may not be overturned.
And we have throughout the staff report and the proposed charter.
Well, I read something different, so I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Is that it?
Question, Mr. Mayor. Steve, the $10,000, since you're not asking for the additional $5,000, the $10,000 that we appropriated earlier, there's about $4,300 left, And so that will be used for public education. Is that right?
Correct. Okay. We normally, if we use past practice on other measures we've had on the ballot, and they have to be very, once the measure's been approved, it has to be just factual information explaining the ballot measure. And we normally do some kind of fact sheet and then distribute it to the residents. So we've, unlike the prior mailing, we probably won't use a professional firm. We'll probably do something in-house and then just send it out to everybody. So the cost will be less than the last one.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I had a quick question. Steve, you mentioned that on the title, and I'm assuming it's title and summary, there are word restrictions. Is that correct?
No, that's the, I think there is on that and on the dialogue.
Yeah, I believe there's word restrictions as far as number on both the statement and the ballot question, I think, is the appropriate term, and then the argument in favor of the measure. And Kelly, I think, has those numbers.
Yeah. The argument is 300 words, and the ballot question is 75.
Okay, if it's 75, how many words, I haven't counted them, but on the bottom of page 5, how many words are there? Seems to me we probably have some wiggle room there.
We got a lot of wiggle room. Just,
okay, then,
just
I understand that the ballot question has to remain somewhat neutral in its orientation. I'm not sure who makes that final determination or evaluation, but I'm wondering whether we could insert right after with respect to the management of municipal affairs, instead of just with respect to municipal affairs, if we could. So the whole statement would read, shall the charter be adopted, making the city of Arroyo Grande a charter city, so that the laws of the city of Arroyo Grande shall prevail over state law with respect to the management of municipal affairs.
That meets the word count for sure.
It makes the word count. Where do we go in terms of the neutrality? It seems pretty benign to me, but and more explanatory than anything else. What's your take on it, Jim?
Well, it seems somewhat limiting. I don't think it's going to affect the integrity of the question, but management is a fairly refined term, and there may be other issues that extend beyond management technically. Why doesn't the council debate the issue a little bit while I think about it and look at the law, see if that's the consensus and the direction you want to go?
The reason why I brought that up is because, and sorry, Tim, but when the city of Vista brought this challenge to the Supreme Court, I believe that was the language that was used. And so, anyway, I'm looking at that, and I'm looking at our situation. I'm looking at the situation for any charter city. It's essentially what we're talking about is who manages municipal affairs.
That's true. I have no. Mr. Mayor.
So.
I don't think it needs to be debated. I agree with you.
I guess I'll just ask a question. If I understand right, staff came up with this based on previously tested language. And I guess that would be, we're now into testing our own language. And I'm just not sure that what we gained by that, I would want to hear what exactly Vista gained by putting management in there. I understand the semantics of it, but I would be more inclined to go with something safer personally.
Like what?
What's here?
Well,
don't add the word management, but unless I know what it gains us.
The long and short of it is, is it the county clerk that reviews this?
No, we determine that right here.
Okay.
I mean, I'm comfortable if that's the direction the council wants to go. I'm certainly comfortable with that wording.
All right. The reason why I want I would like to insert that is that that is the argument that that is before the court now, is who has management of municipal affairs. It's spelled out that way. And in answer to, you know, your question, it's a concern about, you know, not so much prevailing wage. There are charter cities out there that pay prevailing wage, have that provision in there, who are opposing this and who have joined the lawsuit. And the issue is the management of municipal affairs. Does the state manage our municipal affair, or do we manage it? It is a descripting word, I think a descriptive word, that helps the public understand better the question. That's why I would like to insert it.
Mr. Mayor, question, and I guess this is probably what Tim might be looking up right now. Is there some sort of a language in the state constitution or in any law that would apply to charter cities in terms of addressing what exactly is meant by municipal affairs and managing municipal affairs? Are we limiting it? I mean, you brought that issue up. I'm wondering if that is the case.
No, not in the constitution. I'm actually talking about the word management as a somewhat limiting term. I think in this context, it doesn't really change it too much. I'm comfortable that it's still impartial and it still conveys the essential meaning of the question without really changing the integrity of anything.
Thank you.
When it's thrown here, we just sort of have to move through and see what its actual impact is. But I'm comfortable with it, and Steve is too. It's up to the council.
Okay. That's my recommendation. And I'll get to that during comments. Any more questions? All right. Once again, several folks have arrived since we began this discussion. Just wanted you to know that we are using speaker slips this evening. If you have them ready to go, please bring them up to Kelly. That way I can call you in order. And if you would like to speak and haven't filled one out, please do so at this time. Okay, we are going to move to the public hearing portion of 9A. And our first speaker this evening is Terry Madonna, followed by Kyle, is it Crammel? Okay.
Good evening. I'm Terry Madonna from Santa Margarita. I'm the business agent of Plumbers and Pipefitters Local 403 in San Luis Obispo. I spoke here before. You've heard from the local CRAP representatives what we feel about prevailing wage, how important it is. Excuse me. From what I hear from you today is that the charter is important. Other than, I mean, prevailing wage is a small part of it. I keep hearing how important it is and other aspects. With the current legislation, the way it is, I don't see the opposition that you're going to have from labor with this being put on the ballot. I suggest you put language in the charter that protects prevailing wage. Labor will go along with it if it's that important to you. You can bring this up another time if SB 7 is overturned, and bring it to the voters again and try to limit prevailing wage if that's what you think the voters want. I just think that the way it's set up now, the opposition you're going to get from us with the current laws the way they are, if it's that important to you, I believe that's the best route for you guys to go. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments, Kyle. And followed by Sherry Cabral.
Good evening, Mayor, Honorable City Council members. My name is Kyle Cradle-Frolander. I'm with Smart Cities Prevail. And I just wanted to share with you all a staff report from the City of Grover Beach for their special City Council meeting tomorrow, where they're considering a general obligation bond for street repair. And you will notice that in the recommended action, the city manager and staff are recommending that they discontinue the charter process. I think that that would be something you all should consider tonight. Other cities have done so already recently, like La Mirada, said that this was not something they wanted to go forward with. With SB 7, the current law, the way it is regarding prevailing wage, and considering the dangers, the costs, and the risks that come with becoming a charter city, and for the fact that you should save taxpayers money when you don't have a compelling reason, I suggest you discontinue the charter process tonight. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Sherry, followed by David Baldwin.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, staff. With all due respect to this august body, I'd like to address the issue that Councilmember Brown brought to the forefront, and that is that indeed the issue of SB 7 is addressed in your staff report. In fact, and I quote verbatim from your staff report, that due to the inconsistency with the City of Vista ruling, the City Attorney's Office review concluded that it is likely to be invalidated. So I would like to reinforce the fact that you all are including language within your charter, basing your charter predominantly on savings that you feel you can create based on the exemption of prevailing wage, which is strongly bolstered by your opinion and your city attorney's opinion that somehow you're going to overturn the state legislature on a matter of issue. When I reassure you standing here before you tonight that when Senate Pro Tem Steinberg and the other authors of the bill crafted it, they very carefully crafted it to ensure that it could not be overturned and that, in fact, the language was consistent enough with the Vista ruling to differentiate it significantly. So I'm further concerned that you would sit here and push forth a charter that you say can establish savings. However, your own city manager is not prepared to tell you what those monetary savings could be at this time. So that leads me to the conclusion that the veil of quote-unquote savings that has been arrived at is predicated purely on what you think you can save through eliminating prevailing wage. Furthermore, with regard to the lawsuit that has been filed against SB 7, none of the signers on that lawsuit specifically include support of prevailing wage in their charter language. In fact, the only one that does not exempt themselves directly according to their own charter language is the City of Carlsbad. They are not silent on the issue, and in fact, in Section 404 of their charter, they give themselves the permission to have their city council make the determination. So the assertion that individuals, cities that have signed on to the SB 7 lawsuit in the state of California are in fact signing on to it when they support prevailing wage is a complete falsehood. And I don't think that is something that should be perpetuated to your voters. I think, in fact, if you're going to assert that the cities that are involved in SB 7 support prevailing wage, I think some research, which obviously some of the members of the council, probably one in specific, has been somewhat involved in through the League of California Cities, is there. The other thing I would say is this, and I have said this before. You guys, through elimination of prevailing wage or the potential for elimination of prevailing wage, are directly taking a aim and fire approach at your own citizens and their wages. I know of one specific member of the council who drives a public employee's retirement pension through his time with the state agency. And I think that taking aim at your own citizens and their wages, their ability to make a living, support themselves, and be a viable part of this community, I really have an issue with that. And I'm going to tell you right now that I think a lot of your community is going to have an issue with that. I think that that is hypocrisy at its best. I don't think that it is right. I think you're doing your community a huge disservice by trying to find a way effectively to undermine the way that people make a living, and in doing so, couching it in the guise of how you save your city money. I think you're trading one ill for another. I think if you pay people a fair wage, you pay people a living wage, and this city supports that, then you perpetuate a viable, healthy economic structure within your city. When you undermine those wages, you undermine the saliency of the city and the ability to support itself economically and live here. Furthermore, I think that each one of you should know that if you think you're going to gain a huge amount of savings through elimination of prevailing wage and the possibility that SB 7 may be overturned, there's a bill sitting in the legislature right now to raise minimum wage to $13 an hour. And I don't think anybody has...
Conclude your comments.
Absolutely.
Please.
I don't think anybody has calculated that particular nuance into the overall savings. So I would like to, while we support the charter, I will tell you that the members of the labor community here are not willing to do so without very strong supportive language of prevailing wage. And I think that for the overall economic solvency of your community, I think you owe that to the people that live here and that have elected each and every one of you and that support
this
community.
Thank you for your comments. David Baldwin, followed by Joe Farino.
Good evening. David Baldwin from Arroyo Grande. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm a rep for the Plasters and Cement Masons here in San Luis Obispo County. Born and raised here in the county and actually live in Arroyo Grande now. But, yeah, you know, I want to reiterate, I guess, some of what the last few speakers were just saying, but I think without going into a bunch of detail, I've been here several times. Most of you have been here before while I was here speaking, and I've spoke about a lot of different aspects of the prevailing wage portion of the charter and why I think it's important for local residents, especially those in the skilled crafts. But I think there's one thing maybe I haven't talked about before that we can probably all agree on, and that is none of us like regulation. In the industry that we're in the skilled crafts, I would argue that we're probably the most heavily regulated industry in the country. Everything we do is regulated by the government. So on that note, I think we can agree that we don't like that. We don't like it as much as you don't like it. But I think that, you know, this idea that somehow cutting prevailing wage ties into that, I think that's where we split, because prevailing wages is actually, I think it's your duty as representatives for those in your city to ensure that you get the biggest bang for your buck, that all the people in the city get a fair shot of making a living and being able to stay here and live here and support their families, send their kids to school, buy homes, all that. And I think what it comes down to is if you're going to cut out prevailing wages, you know, then you really, I think, have to ask yourself, are we going to have a city that works for everybody or not? And are we going to have a city that supports apprentices that are trying to work their way up to being a journeyman in a skilled craft or not? Are we going to have a city that treats everyone fairly and pays an area standard of wages that is the most common wage in the locale or not? I really think that's what it comes down to. I hope that you'll keep language in that protects prevailing wages in the charter, and then we can all get behind it. Or I didn't know until I heard Kyle speak earlier that about Grover City's staff report. And I would certainly recommend that this issue be tabled for now, if that's in order. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. The last speaker slip I have is Joe Farino.
Good evening. My name is Joe Farino, 315 North Elm Street, and I'm a 30-year resident of this community. Good evening, Mayor, council members, staff, and fellow citizens. I stand before you in favor of the Charter City Amendment. I am in favor of removing unfunded mandates from Sacramento. I also believe that local communities do better under local control using local citizens with local knowledge. However, I do feel like I'm being forced to choose between a political matter and a moral issue. The political issue is obvious. We're going to have more local control and less interference from Sacramento. I think the moral issue is a little less obvious, but has been alluded to. I was here at the last meeting, and I was showing the mailer that the city had put out requesting all citizens to purchase locally using local businesses, which I think is a good thing. So we spend our tax money trying to uplift citizens that are business owners. But now it seems like we want to spend tax monies to actually push down another group, a group that already has state mandated and local area standards wages. And we don't want to just freeze that. We want to harm it. We want to take that away from our citizens. And I don't know, I just find it very difficult, on the one hand, to be spending tax money to uplift one segment of our community, the business owner citizens, and then with tax money out of the other pocket, shoving down another segment of our citizenry. And morally, I got to tell you, I find that repugnant. I'm a big believer in a rising tide floats all boats, and that we're here as a community to service all of our citizens. I said before, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Spend money locally on businesses. That's a good thing. But also spend local money on local workers. You know, we exist as one community. We cannot neglect the left arm to favor the right arm, because the body needs both arms to prosper. I really want to support and vote for the city charter proposal, but I have to tell you right now, morally, I can't do it. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your comments, and that was the last speaker slip I had on 9A. So we're going to bring this to the council, and I'll start to my right with Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What we're discussing tonight, debating tonight, is whether or not we put the issue of whether or not the city of Rio Grande should become a charter city on the ballot for the people of the community to vote on. We're not deciding whether we're going to be a charter city or not. We're deciding whether we're going to let the people of the city decide whether we're going to be a charter city or not. With that in mind, I want to go back over a few of the issues that are key topics here. And obviously, the one that attracts the most attention and gets most people's juices flowing is the issue of prevailing wages and the requirements of Chapter 2, of Article 2, Chapter 1 of Part 7 of the California Labor Code, also referred to as the SB 7 issue. What we're looking to produce in the charter amendment that we're putting forward is the product of a number of public meetings where we had a committee of citizens that put this together. What it calls for in Article 3 under contracts, public financing, and franchises is Section 301, Public Works Contracts. It says that the city shall follow the provisions of the California Public Contract Code and its standards, procedures, rules, or regulations relating to the bidding, award, and performance of any public works contract, except that the city shall have the power to establish by ordinance alternative standards, procedures, rules, or regulations for public projects in the following areas. And there are four areas here. One is the city council may by ordinance establish criteria for determining the award of public works contracts to the lowest responsible and most reliable bidder on any project, as well as other aspects of the bidding, award, and performance by any public works contract it deems to be in the best interest of the city. City 2, the city shall have the power to accept gifts and donations, including donations of material and labor, in the construction of any public works project. Number 3, the city shall have the power to perform any work or improvement by use of its own forces, our own employees, and is not required to contract for the construction of works of public improvement. And 4, the city may also contract with other public agencies for construction of works of public improvement. This gives the city the ability to accept donations of labor and materials, which we don't have right now. It allows us to use our own employees to do some of these jobs, which we can't do right now. It allows us to establish our own criteria for the acceptance of contracts, which if we go back to the police building project that went out there, we could have crafted that, which could have made it more, could have put the emphasis on hiring someone locally. So we would have the ability to do some things that do give us more flexibility. Nowhere in this particular element does it say anything about prevailing wage. That's a separate issue, and I'm going to get to that in a moment. This does give us additional powers and capability to contract for public works contracts. It does say that we're going to follow the California Public Contract Code, except for these instances I just mentioned. When it talks about prevailing wage, it says the City Council shall establish by ordinance criteria and guidelines for determining when payment of prevailing wages will apply to any contract. Prevailing wages shall also apply if, one, the prevailing wage is legally required and constitutionally permitted to be imposed. If that's the case, we're going to be using prevailing wage. Two, if it's required by federal or state grants pursuant to any federal or state law. If that's the case, we're going to use prevailing wage. And three, if the City Council does not consider the project to be a municipal affair. We are not saying we're not going to accept prevailing wage any and all times. We're saying we're going to select sometimes when we may not accept prevailing wage. Going to the next page in here in terms of the draft, we've got Section 307, point Section 302 and Labor Code Section 1782. And this addresses Article 2, Chapter 1, Part 7 of the California Labor Code, SB 7. If SB 7 remains in place, if it is not overturned, and I have no idea whether it's going to be changes in those, as a general law city, we haven't changed them. I see nothing to indicate that we're going to make any kind of differences should we become a charter city. I am willing to put this issue before the people of the city of Rio Grande. I'm willing to go forward with this tonight and put it on the ballot and let the citizens of the city vote for this. I'll support this tonight.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Right down the line, Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to just echo Councilman Costello's comments. This is something that's going to be put before the voters. So if you're correct and the majority of the voters believe you, that's what's going to happen. Second thing I want to talk about is that the question I asked Steve is, absent prevailing wage, would you still do it? Would you, if the law remains the same, which I have no intention to believe it's going to change, maybe it will, maybe it won't. A number of you have gotten up and said it's so well crafted, it's not going to change. If that's true, what are you so worried about? Why are you packing the room with people from out of town talking about union issues if you really believe this is as well-crafted as it is? That raises my eyebrow. So the idea that when I put Steve on the hot seat, and I've done it before. I've done it privately, and I've done it publicly. Would you still do this if prevailing wage was not involved? And the answer absolutely is yes. So even if the rules remain the same, we would benefit from being a charter city, no doubt about it. I don't understand this whole idea that you feel like you're being attacked. The current law of the land is you get government funding, you pay prevailing wage. Think about the arguments that you've made tonight. I'm highly offended that someone would get up here and say that someone who is getting a public pension is being hypocritical and not making decisions in the best benefit for the city, because I've sat with these people for a number of years and I know their integrity. All they're trying to do is put it before the voters for a vote. They're not imposing anything. So you really got to think about the arguments that you're making and ask them, do they really hold any intellectual honesty? And I don't think they do, because we've already said if the law of the land remains the same and we have to pay prevailing wage when we get government funding, which is 90% of what we do, nothing's going to change. You're talking about a very small percentage of jobs that are going to be affected. Very small, because most of our funding comes from some other source. The one discussion that we had was the local recreation center, local funding. How much would we save if we didn't do prevailing wage? $600,000. Hey, well, guess what? For a small city, $600,000 is a bit of money. And we have good local contractors, whether they get paid prevailing wage, who have told me they'd be happy to do the work. Okay? So I'm just asking you to really think about the logic behind your discussion when the reality is you've already told me you've won. The state has already approved that prevailing wage needs to be paid. And yet here we get people coming from out of town trying to have us argue against something that's already the law of the land. Why is that happening? You've got to ask yourself, why does that occur? It's an interesting question. And it's either that, either the law is poorly written or you're worried about it getting overturned. And you guys have to be honest about that. You really do. But it's just, it's a small percentage of what we ultimately do based on the way the law is currently written. You're arguing about something that is just amazing to me. Given what we could have done with the police station, with changes in contracting law, prevailing wage aside, we could have been a lot farther along with the police station, again, prevailing wage aside, if this had been approved. So look at it in terms of its total and really ask yourself, are you promoting self-interest or are you looking at it from a logical standpoint? And please, when you get up to the podium, don't accuse somebody of hypocrisy when you really don't know what they're about. That's not fair, it's not rational, and it's not logical. So those are my comments, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm ready to put this before the voters tonight. We've looked at it a lot. The committee, the Charter Committee has looked at it. There's been lots of public input. Really, Councilmember Costello and Councilmember Brown took a lot of the things out of my mouth. I was going to bring up the police station. That was an eye-opener for me. If the prevailing wage was not a part, if the law stays the way it is, yes, I definitely think that going to a charter city is very important for the city of Arroyo Grande.
We clearly disagree with. But I want to deal with one comment in particular, and that is the one that Councilmember Brown touched on. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I think those comments were probably directed at me with regard to pensions. And most of you know that I did work for the state of California for a shade over 20 years, and when I retired, I drew not 100% of my pension for life, but roughly 38%. Of my pension. So, and we have a couple of other state employees up here as well, and one day they will retire. And if I understood one in particular, the sooner the better. But that's the nature of the beast. So, so if that's a direction that you want to go on your next flyer that you send out, be my guest. Go ahead and take your hit. We'll see where it goes, but that's where I am retirement-wise. And on the issue of the manner in which the public is being educated on this issue, I do want to, as I indicated at the last meeting, there have been mailers that have gone out to our community, and I vowed at the last meeting that when they go out, we would talk about them. And this is the time to do that. So, Kelly, if you would just put the picture of it up there, and then we'll go to the PowerPoint. All right, that's the mailer that went out. There was a that's the face page of it. If you want to, politicians could make you pay more under the proposed charter plan. If you want to turn it over. Charter City should come with a warning label. And I want you to take particular note, if you could, with some of the quotes on the left-hand side, because those are the ones I'm going to talk about. There's also an embedded quotation in the paragraph that reads, what is a charter? So I know you can't read the fine print. That's unfortunately the best we can do on that overhead projector. But I think once we get into more detailed explanation, you'll kind of get the gist of where I'm going with this flyer. So why don't we take that down and put on the PowerPoint? Okay. That flyer was sent out by an organization called the Middle Class Taxpayers Association. It's interesting what you can find out about an organization when you go online. And so I'm going to show you a picture of what a lot of people had to say about the Middle Class Taxpayers Association. They're the ones listed as the ones who financed this and sent this flyer out. So who are they really, the Middle Class Taxpayers Association? I had not heard of them. The bottom line is they're not who you think they are. They were created in 2011 in the San Diego area. And as some of the quotes that I saw, they're a front for unions. More specifically, a shield for the San Diego Labor Council. They don't advocate for the middle class, and they don't advocate for taxpayers. So what does the organization really do? This comes from people who have had direct contact with them. They fight against open and competitive building or bidding. They fight against pension reform. And they support taxing and spending more of your money. So let's look at something specific, specific quotes in the mailer. One of those quotes on the left-hand side that I asked you to kind of focus on was a statement that the Bell Council found loopholes in the law that allowed big salaries. Well, that's not entirely true. And actually, that's not a quote that came from the union. That's a quote that came from the LA Times, if I take it on face value. What happened in Bell was they weren't looking for a loophole. They created those loopholes and gray areas. They had in mind exploiting them from the very beginning. And as I mentioned earlier, when we talked about the city of Bell, those people were criminals. They were crooks from the very beginning. And as a result of them, they have been tried and convicted and sent to prison. Now, the Bell scandal happened roughly 4 years ago. But yet, the unions keep playing that as a broken record. And the reason why is because that's pretty much all they've got. You don't hear them talking about, and I just listed the cities that are fairly close to us. You don't hear them talking about Monterey, Pacific Grove, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Solvang, and there are 116 was. So they had to pay the average of what those 10 other cities were making. And without collective bargaining, they had no other choice but to declare bankruptcy. They had no money to pay CalPERS, and they had no money to continue to pay the staggering salaries that they were paying. And this is a documented fact. San Bernardino has paid over $1 million in raises during their bankruptcy procedure because of the contracts that they have in place and because of the charter provision. They have no mechanism to change it. The charter is the law of the land. So they had to continue to pay those contracts. Now, here's a quote I really had some difficulty keeping a straight face with this one. Charters lead to more spending on politics, and that means more meddling by out-of-town special interests. Well, if you look at the organization that circulated this particular flyer, that is precisely exactly who they are. They've spent millions on influencing Sacramento politicians, and now the money is being spent here in our own city to try and influence our voters. So, in my view, at least, there is no better example of an out-of-town special interest than the people who crafted this flyer that they sent out to you. The bottom line, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. Councilmember Costello detailed it very succinctly. The only thing that I want to emphasize is the last bullet point, and that is that we had a citizens committee that reviewed, modified, and approved the charter that we have in front of us. The council didn't create that. We convened a group of citizens who live and work here. They're the ones that put this together. They're the ones that are promoting it. And yes, there will be more public education, and yes, there will be more promotion of this particular charter. A couple more points. You can go ahead and I think I can do that. Maybe not. There I go. A couple more points that I want to make. After the, it's interesting because after the Bell scandal broke, it was actually the League of Cities, League of California Cities. For those of you who don't know who the League is, it's the advocacy organization for all 482 cities, including the 121 charter cities. We actually reached out to the state controller's office and worked with the state controller to figure out a way in which we could better ensure that there was transparency that would deal with some of the abuses of power that we were seeing and the abuses of authority, specifically as a result of Bell. Why? To make sure something like Bell didn't happen again. The state controller was actually very grateful for us reaching out to him. We've worked with him. He's developed a web page. He's now coming back to us and asking if we would participate in the unveiling of that web page. Once again, to promote transparency so that this doesn't happen again in the future. So cities actually came forward to help create a system that would keep Bell from happening again. It's interesting, I mentioned the Citizens Committee, because now the city of San Bernardino is convening a Citizens Committee. Why? To undo that provision in their charter that says you can't participate in collective bargaining, you have to pay a parity based on an average of the 10 cities that we've identified. No negotiation, you got to pay it. They're convening that Citizens Committee to take that provision out and put collective bargaining back in. And then there was a comment about, SB 7. It's interesting because we've heard speakers that have come up here and indicated that SB 7 is not going to be overturned, where they've had the best lawyers look at them, so on and so forth. If that's true, then why is there such concern about the way that case is progressing? The League is facilitating the lawsuit, but the League is not a named party to the lawsuit. There are several other cities that are the named parties in the lawsuit. You could be very right on the issue in terms of whether those cities have a prevailing wage provision in their contract or not. That's not the point that I was trying to make. When the League of Cities was trying to determine whether they were going to live in an area where their citizens support it, they can afford it, and they pay it. They're okay with that. But they're not okay with this law. So that is the point that I wanted to bring out. In terms of the posture of the unions, I think it's important to note that I think it was, if I have this right, I know somebody will correct me, it's the State Building Construction Trades Council of California. Is that the right title? Pretty much? Close? Close enough? Okay. The lawsuit, which has been filed, the briefs have been filed in San Diego. That lawsuit, there was a request from the Building and Trades Council to intervene. The judge who got the case granted their request to intervene. And so the first thing they did as an intervening party was dismiss the judge, because they felt he was biased. So, and each one of the parties has that right. You have one right to dismiss. And so now instead of this moving forward in a timely manner with a hearing so that we can decide this thing one way or the other, now it goes back to the presiding judge who has to assign another judge to the case. So if this is a slam dunk, if the best attorneys have guaranteed that SB 7 is going to stand, then why are we going through all of this? We know why we are. I guess my question is, why are the unions fighting so hard for what they consider to be a sure thing? One way or the other, I hope this thing is decided quick. Anyway, so for all of the reasons that have been stated, I think, by Councilmember Costello, I couldn't have stated it any better, and the other council members as well. I'm going to move forward with this. If another mailer comes out, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to go through it point by point, and to the extent that we can. And our public education effort will begin, I assume, in an organized way very, very shortly. I've had a lot of people that have come up to me and have pretty much realized what's happening now with a tenor of these mailers. And so, you know, you're obviously going to do whatever you feel is appropriate to do, but the hit pieces that you're sending out that are totally, completely false are not getting any traction. So continue on, and so will we, and we'll see where it goes. I was hoping for something that was a little bit, I guess, more in better spirits, but it doesn't appear that it's shaping up that way. So with that, we have... if I'm reading the council correctly, we have a motion that includes three resolutions on page 8, 10, and 13, and I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move resolution of the City Council of the City of Royal Grande ordering the submission of the qualified voters of the city, a measure relating to the adoption of a city charter, the general municipal election to be held on Tuesday, November 4th, 2014, as called by resolution number 4596, with the change of the language in the specific, shall the charter be adopted, making the City of Royal Grande charter city of the City of Royal Grande, shall prevail over state law with respect to managing municipal affairs.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I just want to clarify, the language that you suggested was the management of, and that's slightly different.
Right.
I would go with the management of.
Okay. All right.
One other clarification. Exhibit A, referenced in the resolution, is actually Attachment 1 for convenience purposes. It's labeled Attachment 1 because it's referenced throughout the entire staff report. So with that clarification, we're ready.
Okay. Good with that, Joe?
Yes.
Yes.
So, okay. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, I move resolution of the City Council of the City of Royal Grande setting priorities for filing written arguments regarding a city measure and directing the city attorney to prepare an impartial analysis with the change in the language consistent with the suggested.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second by Councilmember Barnidge. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Is that on?
Page 21, last page, I believe.
Page 21, then. Mr. Mayor, move an argument in favor of measure and whatever we're numbering this measure.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, how's everybody doing?
Well, that might be a while, you think?
I'm good.
All right.
I'm good. Hmm?
Okay, once again, for those folks who may have come in after I made the announcement, we are using speaker slips this evening. If you'd like to get up and speak on our remaining public hearings, then please fill out a speaker slip and give it to Kelly up here, and we'll be good to go. Okay, the next item is 9B, and this is consideration of water rates for fiscal year 2014-15 through fiscal year 2018-19. And good evening, Deborah and Steve.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the Council. I'm Debbie Malicote, your Administrative Services Director. I'm here tonight to talk about the water rates adoption. Just a little bit of a review of the process that we've been through. Council did review the water and sewer rate study on March 25th. That was prepared by Raftellis, our consultant, and at that time directed staff to notify the ratepayers of the proposed increases in accordance with Proposition 218. We have done that. And then so tonight, the process would have us hold a public hearing to consider adopting the rates for the next five fiscal years. I should point out that the rates that are adopted tonight are the maximum amounts that we would increase water rates without going through another Prop 218 process. So it's kind of the ceiling on what we would adopt or implement without doing another 218 notification. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's a automatic autopilot type of rate increase. Just a quick review under our current rate structure. We are generating a very slight surplus that we're putting into our reserves, but we anticipate that surplus situation will diminish in fiscal year 17-18, and at that point our rates would not produce sufficient revenues to cover our expenses, and so we would end up with an annual operating deficit. And in fiscal year 18-19, we would begin to not meet our obligations related to our debt as far as covering the amount of revenues we need to bring in to cover those debt ratios. So the recommended water rate adjustments and objectives for us were, first of all, we know we need to comply with bond covenants. That's something that's important. We need to generate some positive cash now, because we know that we have capital projects in the future that we're going to use to pay cash for. Rather than financing those obligations, we would rather use our cash to pay for our capital projects. So we need to build up some reserves to continue that what they call pay-as-you-go funding for those capital projects. And we believe that implementation of measured adjustments over the next 5 years is the most appropriate way to do that. So we would implement a 1% rate increase, followed by 2%, and then 3, 3, and 3 during the five-year period. This is what the proposed rate plan would generate for us. We would have enough revenues to cover our debt obligations. We would have slight annual surpluses for reserves. Again, building up those reserves in these first 5 years, knowing that we have some pretty hefty projects out there into the future. We feel that that's a prudent way to finance those projects. There's two ways that we recover revenue in the water fund. One is through fixed fees, and one is through what we would call variable or consumption-based, so the number of units of water that you use, there's a charge for the number of units of water that you use, and then there's just a fixed charge that we collect regardless of the number of units of water that you use. Each unit of water is 748 gallons. Costs associated with customer service. And we're proposing going from a four-tiered structure to a three-tiered structure with the expansion of the number of water units in each tier. This displays the fixed charge by meter size, comparing the current fixed charge with what we're proposing for most of our residential customers. They have a 5/8 inch meter. This is a difference for them of $1.25 per billing cycle. Most of our water use occurs in the first 18 units of
consumption, and so we're proposing that Tier 1 would be an allotment of 18 units. That represents basically indoor water use. The outdoor water use would be Tier 2, and that's another 18 units of consumption. And then anything above the 32 units is for what might be termed excess usage. Again, we're proposing going from a 4-tier system to a 3-tier system. And you can see the rates for each tier, each unit of water in the tier actually go down a little bit for the first 2 units. And that third tier is kind of a combined blended cost of the current Tier 3 and 4. A little bit of comparison for our average customer. If you're a customer that uses 18 units of water, this displays what you would expect your bill to be over the 5-year period and the year-over-year changes, and you can see that for the first year it's actually a bit of a savings, and then the second year is 2% increase, followed by 3, 3, and 3. For a customer that uses 31 units of water, again, you'll see a slight savings in the first year, followed by some modest increases in the next 4-year period. Multifamily also, those rates will change. Again, you'll see a slight decrease in the first year and then moderate increases during the 5-year period. This would be a multifamily residential customer, so an apartment complex that has 12 apartments using 300 units of water. Non-residential customers don't have a tiered rate, they have a flat rate, and we would propose to continue with that. And you can see that the increases for non-residential customers are modest as well. And this is a comparison of our bi-monthly water bills compared to agencies within our county and in our surrounding communities. We are here. This is the proposed rate. This is our current rate. So we actually in the first year have a slight savings. So you can see that our rates are, although slightly higher than some others in our surrounding area, they are much lower than some of our friends and neighbors that live in these communities here. So the recommendation in front of you tonight is twofold. One is to conduct a public hearing to consider the protests, any protests regarding the proposed water rate adjustments and the water rate structure. And the second is, if there is no majority protest, adopt a resolution establishing the new water rates and the rate structure effective July 26, which is the first day of a billing cycle in 2014. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I do.
Okay. Kristen, do you have a question?
He can go first. It's okay.
Okay. We'll start with Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I asked a few questions to Steve before the meeting, and I'm not sure the answer has been generated yet, but I'd like to ask a question, Debbie, if I could, focusing on page 35 of the water wastewater rate study report. I admit I'm a little bit confused when I look at the figures here, and maybe you can help me sort this out a bit. If we look at column A, the first column for fiscal year 2014, we have revenue adjustments from rates as one section, and we have section 640 operating fund cash flows, and then 641 Lopez fund. Down at the very bottom of this page, or towards the bottom of it, we have total revenues for funds 640 and 641, and it shows $6.694 million. But if I go up to the total operating revenues under 640, that's $6.665 million. And then go to 641 Lopez Fund, total operating revenues of $1.002 million. That comes out to $7.6 million. And yet it shows
the time to research before the meeting, but I will find out and get back to you.
Is that possibly mistaken calculations?
I don't believe so, because we looked at these numbers very carefully when they were provided by the consultant, but I didn't have a chance to look into what was happening with that number, so I will do that and let you know.
Okay. And then going down to under 640 operating fund cash flows, towards the bottom there, it's got ending balances, and we see that's going up $6 million, $8 million, $10 million. Is that our capital expense funding? That's what we plan on using to pay for the big ticket items?
It's a little bit confusing. Unfortunately, the consultant didn't provide the fund balance in the Lopez fund. But if you look at the total, at the very bottom, total water enterprise ending fund balance, what's actually happening is that the water fund balance is growing, but the Lopez fund under this scenario is going further and further into the hole. So together they balance each other out, and we end up with about $6.2 million total water system fund balance, which is the number at the very bottom. But unfortunately, you would not be able to tell that from this because you don't have the Lopez fund balance.
Okay. And that Lopez fund, what are we spending that money on in that Lopez fund?
It primarily is for debt service, but also for water treatment plants, costs associated with getting the water from the Lopez.
And our debt service, I think I saw somewhere, is $1.4 million this year?
Yes.
Okay. See if I have any other questions very quickly here. I don't think so. I think I'm
good. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think you answered the question, but I just want to pose it again, and that is we're trying for water conservation, which means we're going to use less water, which means, in theory, we're going to have less revenue. Do these increases cover what we need to cover that decrease in revenue?
Yeah, when we created the model that generates the revenue information that we need to generate in order to cover our costs, we did take into account that we would meet our reduction targets by 2020, the reduction that we need to make in water consumption. So we have built into the model an assumption that we will meet that target, and the revenues that we need to pay for the water system will be sufficient if those targets are met.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Those are my questions.
Okay. Councilmember Barnes, question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, Debbie, in the staff report, it talks about if we didn't have these increases in fiscal years 2015 and 16, we have a $520,000 shortfall. And then in fiscal year 2018-19, $800,000 shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then each year, the 5 years, the 1%, 2%, 3%, 3%, 3%, you talked about those as a ceiling. So if we wanted to reduce some of those from the get-go, could we increase those later in the 5 years, or would we have to do the Prop 218 mailing all over again and do a new study?
We would definitely have to do a Prop 218 notification again if we were to increase. If we were to come back and say this rate that we propose that you adopt tonight is insufficient to meet our needs,
mm-hmm.
We would have to go through another Prop 218 notification. And depending on when that happened, we may feel that a new study would be warranted if we felt like the data was sufficiently stale or there had been some changed circumstances. We might feel that that would be a prudent move as well.
Okay, but we can reduce those during the five-year time.
Correct.
Okay.
So, for example, if we were to come back and have unexpected savings and realize that we don't need perhaps like a 3% increase, maybe we could cut that back to 2%.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I would say would be part of our budget process, where we would be evaluating the performance of the fund and the expected expenditures. And at that time, we could make that decision or recommendation to you all that we don't need to adopt the full amount that was authorized by the council.
Okay, so we take a look at that every year?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Actually, she asked a question I had, so that's fine.
Okay. I have a couple of questions, some that you and I discussed, and for the record,
there are some pretty expensive projects out there a little farther into the horizon that we want to plan for.
Go ahead, Steve.
I just want to add a little bit to that because we did discuss some fairly specific targets, and there was really a couple goals we were trying to reach. We did actually make the strategic decision to dip into reserves a little bit to try to keep the rates as low as we could, with the caveat that the second goal was to try to never let those, the revenue get too much below the expenditures to where if you project out, we would get to a point where we'd need a big increase, like a 10% increase or whatnot. As far as the reserves themselves, the rates that are proposed would draw those reserves down slightly. We were trying to maintain about a $2.5 million reserve above the minimum policy level, and that was because a combination of we have some projects within the master plan that aren't fully funded within this plan, and then two, what we talked about at the last meeting with the significant things we're going forward with to try to address our water supply. We really wanted to maintain about a $2.5 million buffer in there because we're going to see some significant needs in the future, and so that was kind of the target that we based these recommendations on.
Okay, and Jeff, maybe this is one for you. At the top of page 11 of the study, there's a table 2-3, and this is the water CIP, capital improvement plan, and there is a line item there for roughly $500,000. This is in the out years 2018 for Reservoir 7. Can you elaborate on, it doesn't say what we're going to do to it. Can you tell us what that entails?
Certainly, Mayor Farrar, members of the council, Jeff English, Public Works Director. Reservoir 7 doesn't exist today. There is a Reservoir 5, which is in the Rancho Grande area. It's a 1.2 million gallon reservoir that was sized for certain growth expectations. Since that reservoir was built, we've extended a number of neighborhoods to be served by that reservoir, including on the other side of the freeway, because we had a number of issues with regard to pressure, and it was easier to do that than add booster pumps. And so that reservoir has been extended. In fact, its life expectancy at build-out is that it will not meet the demands of build-out. We've annexed 66 acres of the James Way area. There's a number of projects that we've added that will increase demand on that particular reservoir. So Reservoir 7 project is actually a project to build a new side-by-side reservoir adjacent to Reservoir 5. It's a significant project, but it's a required project for a number of reasons. One is because the reservoir that's currently there doesn't meet our build-out capacity. And secondly, that if that reservoir, for any reason, need to be taken out of circulation for cleaning or some kinds of repairs, which is rare, a tank has a lifetime. AWWA estimates 20 to 25 years lifetime. That reservoir was put in the 80s, 90s, so it's at its lifetime where it needs to be cleaned and maintained. We have no capability now to do that. So the Reservoir 7 would be built adjacent to Reservoir 5. It'll give us the capability. It's a smaller reservoir. It's a 500,000-gallon reservoir based on what our projections are. It will allow us to serve the communities for that period of time where that reservoir is down. And so it's a critical project. It's an expensive project, but it was calculated into previous fees, and that's one of the reasons where we need to keep the capital projects at a certain level so that we can accommodate large-scale projects like that. Hopefully I answered your question.
Yeah. Thank you. I knew there was a reason why I didn't know much about Reservoir 7. And then the last question is actually amplifying on what Councilmember Barnage mentioned a second ago, and that is I'm hopeful that it would be possible to build into this perhaps a, you mentioned a yearly review. I was thinking in terms of specifically reviewing the rate structure, if we were to maybe check in on the third year before we enact a 3%, we would have had a 1%, 2%, and I should...
Hopefully we'll be farther along in these studies that we discussed at the last meeting, and hopefully we'll have a much better idea of what our future capital needs are going to be, so that would be a good time.
Okay. Any other questions? Go ahead.
I've got a question. I just throw it out here now. Speaker at the very beginning of the meeting came forward and talked about unintended consequences, and one of the things he mentioned was people that have been conserving water for a number of years and have got their usage down to a real flat line. And I'm just wondering if maybe we can consider that we might throw in some sort of an appeals process or some sort of system in play where if someone has been at that level and they can't reduce their usage by 20%, I know the state's mandating that we're all going to reduce our usage by 20% by 2020, I think it is, that perhaps there's a an appeals mechanism built in that they could come in and prove their case, and instead of being charged the Tier 2 rate, they might stay at the Tier 1 rate for their usage. And just
That's a little different item than we're discussing this evening, but I can tell you that we have gotten similar feedback from other folks in the community on that same issue, which was helpful to us. And so we're starting to work on that. We hope to bring that back within a couple months, but that in a particular aspect, we're trying to address it through a couple different ways, and Tim has some of his staff working on that right now. That's an important issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. If there are no other questions, this is a public hearing. I have two speaker slips. The first is Mike Miller. Is it or Millen or Miller? Followed by Carol Berger.
Mayor Ferrara, members of the council. My name is Mike Miller. I live at 387 Corbett Canyon Road in Rio Grande. And I submitted a letter earlier. I hope you've had a chance to read that. And so I won't dwell on all aspects of the letter, but just to highlight it, we bought our property 32 years ago, zoned agricultural, and we thought, what are some reasonable things to do to an acre and a quarter of agricultural property besides put a house? We thought planting stuff seemed to make sense. And so over the years, we've planted hundreds of trees as well as other plants. In the letter, I detailed a number of benefits to planting trees. And although many of them redound to us personally, those benefits have wider application to the neighborhood, to the city, and even the nation. Most of them are common sense or easily understood. So the problem is that our rate, the tiered rate, is the same as those of a person with the smallest residential lot. And our water bill is out of sight. We've taken a number of steps to cut down our water usage to the result that we've lost a number of our trees and virtually all of our other plants because we just can't afford to water them anymore. And so what I'm asking is that consideration be given to adjusting that tier rate so that the water usage rate is tied to the size of a property. If we all agree that trees are beneficial, and of course the city has a number of trees of its own that it's planted in all over the city and even mandates tree planting in some cases, so I think there's no argument that the trees are beneficial in a number of different ways, and yet there's no corresponding consideration for a property like ours, which is contributing to the environment and to the city in a number of ways in addition to our own personal enjoyment. So I ask that you consider giving us some consideration as these tiers are established so that the penalties kick in at a higher rate, at a higher level based on lot size or previous year's bill or something like that. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Mr. Miller, can I a quick question? I'm curious because I've done the same thing and my street tree is not doing well. Are your trees on drip or
spray? They were, but we're hand watering now because with drip, as you know, you really have to check every tree periodically to make sure if it's clogged. There are just a lot of difficulties with that. So we've cut back to the absolute minimum watering schedule, and we water by hand.
Okay.
As needed. We take trees. Okay. So we hate to see those go.
And can you just tell me, you don't have to give me a rundown of all of them, just the species that you've planted. I mean, redwoods, oaks, I'm just
mostly conifers. A lot of redwoods, sequoias do very well in our area, spruces, firs, pines, cryptomerias.
Okay. And then how big was your acreage, did you say?
An acre and a quarter.
An acre and a quarter. Okay. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
There's a reason for this. Councilmember Barnich is the chair of the Aurora Grande Tree Guild. She may be able to help you. So,
good. Well, any help would be appreciated.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Carol Berger. And this is the last speaker slip that I have.
I'll make it very quick. Good evening, Mayor and City Council. I'm a senior citizen. I've lived in Arroyo Grande in my condo for over 30 years. I can't afford my water bill. I don't know what to do. I mean, do I use somebody else's toilet? My bills, you said you brought yours in. I brought mine in, $102.84. My water is only $25. The next one, my water is $17. My bill is $102.84. I've never been to Lopez Lake. Lopez Treatment Plant. Who else pays for that? Are we going to pay for that for the rest of our lives? I don't know anything about a Lopez Treatment Plant. Sanitary District. Why am I paying for all this? When is it ever going to get off my bill? Thank you.
Okay. All I can say is I wish I had your water bill and not mine.
I'm sure you have a family.
No, I'm single. I live in the house all by myself. So that's why I want my water meter checked. So, all right, I'll give folks a shot. Did you want to come back up? And I don't have a speaker slip, but come on back. No, I'm talking about the gentleman in the back. So, can you come up to the podium, please? And maybe we can get your name one more time for the record.
Yes, I'm Joe Farino. I was wondering if we could look at a different page. I was looking when we had the three tiers up. Yes, there. So I'm confused. Tier 1 is 18, Tier 2 is 36, but Tier 3 starts at 32.
That's a typo. Sorry.
She said it was a typo.
It should be 36. It's a typographical error.
I figured it was a typo, but I wasn't sure if it was 16, 16, 32, or 18, 18, 36. So you've cleared it up. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thanks for pointing that out. Did you have some additional comments?
I apologize. There's one thing I forgot to mention, and that is that there is a tiered structure based on meter size. However, that's a distinction without a difference because even on a property as large as ours, we have the smallest meter.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. That concludes our public hearing portion of 9B, and we will bring this back to the council. And we'll start with Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have no problem with moving forward. I think we've had some public discussion about possible inequities, and if there's some way we can deal with those, I'd like to see it because I think we owe it to the community to say that we've at least heard their concerns. I don't know what the exact answer is yet. And I think Joe brought up another issue that was not exactly on point for tonight, but I just think water bills, I remember, were a large percentage of my living expense, and it seems like a small amount, but in the end, if you're a single income earner, it's a big part of your bill or a big part of your life, and so we owe them respect to at least talk to them and see if there's anything we can do. So other than that, I'm ready to move forward.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Barnich.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm ready to move forward as well. We have to maintain the reserves because we have some projects that might be coming up that will actually help the city in the future. And so we talked about those at the last meeting, recycled water and such. And so I believe we have to have healthy reserves. I'm glad that those are the ceiling rates and that we can look at sort of check in yearly or before the third year increase. I think that's a great idea. I do sympathize with Mr. Miller. I have a half acre, and I have lots and lots of trees, and with the amount of rain that we're not getting anymore, they've really declined. And so recently, because usually after a couple years, you shouldn't have to water trees anymore. The city waters their trees for 2 years, and then after that, we don't water them anymore unless it's a prolonged drought.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First thing I want to say is that what we're looking at is a city water system. It's a water enterprise that exists to provide water service to our population. So your question is about when will you stop seeing these things about Lopez on there? We're not going to see those go away because we're paying to keep the infrastructure and mechanism in place so that the water, when you go turn the tap on, the water is going to come out. There's a lot that goes into all the infrastructure behind that, unfortunately, and it's very expensive. I'm happy to see this as a 5-year ceiling with the opportunity to come back and revisit this in a year or two and take a look and see what's going on, that perhaps we can adjust things down, particularly look into things like this possibly a typo here on the $100,000 increase that may actually bring things down and ease things a bit. But in the long run, we have to keep sizable reserves up. We need to keep an operating reserve equal to 90 days of operating expenses. We need to have a capital improvement reserve of $500,000. We need to have debt service equal to 1 year's debt service, which is a $1.4 million. So right there we're talking about needing $3 or $4 million every year just sitting in reserves. And if we don't change the rates, we're going to see those reserves get eaten into until within a few years we'll be in a negative position and we won't have any reserves. So unfortunately, we have to go forward. While people are talking up here, I've been listening but making some quick calculations, and I was looking at people that use 12 units of water, 24 units of water, 36 units of water over the next couple of years. And if you're using 12 units of water, your rate is going to go up slightly next year by a couple of dollars. If you're using 24 units of water, your rate's going to go down $11 a month or $11 every 2 months. If you're using 36 units of water, your rate's going to go down about $9. It seems that as we've changed the tiers, it's going to take a couple of years for this to level out. And I projected it out for a couple of years, and there are some changes there. I'd like to see the ability for people to come in and make some sort of appeal based on historical usage, if they've gotten things down to the bare minimum, or if they have some sort of radical change in their home. Children return home, people have been laid off, you end up doubling the size of the family that's in the house. That will have some impacts. They may not be huge on a bi-monthly basis, but I think if someone's on a fixed income, something that I consider inconsiderate may be significant. So I think if we can have some sort of mechanism come forward, and it's not what we're looking at tonight, I'm just asking staff if we can go forward with that in some way to consider that. Summing it all up, I'll support going forward tonight with the suggested rate increases, with the understanding that we will take a look back in as the years go by.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add here. I am also in support of this evening. I do think there are
significant number of assumptions, particularly on the on how successful or unsuccessful we'll be with conservation. I know this has been difficult for a lot of cities, that they achieve their conservation and then they have to raise everybody's rates to cover the fact that there's less water, or they have to find new users. So I think it is important that we'll take a look at it a few years out. May very well be, if we're not making the conservation, then we may have some extra funding. But I do think the study was fairly accurate. Did take into account that, added in as noted, the kinds of improvements we're gonna make. So I expect when we get to the third year that we'll be fairly close to this number. I'll be interested to see the appeal. Most of what I heard about unintended consequences is actually covered by the tiered rate structure. If you're a good water conservationist, you're being rewarded today, and you'll continue to be rewarded into the future. I'm still not quite sure what the appeals process is, but I'll deal with that when it gets here. But I'm prepared this evening to go forward with this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Actually, there was one of the speakers brought up the Lopez situation, Debbie, and that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask for the benefit of the public as well. All of us see those line items on our water bill, and recognizing that one of, I think under the Lopez treatment, based on what you were telling me, there's two charges actually. One is the rehabilitation of the water treatment plant, which was done by the county, and those costs are passed through to us. The other one happened several years ago, and that was the rehabilitation and the retrofit of the dam. It was not seismically safe. They essentially had to build a new dam in front of the old one, which they did. Those were passed through costs to not just the city of Arroyo Grande, but everybody that uses Lopez water. That's what that line item is. So my question is, when are we done with the bond on the dam and the tweak? And I haven't yet engaged in the turf removal program, but since a good portion of my lawn is already turning brown, that may be an option, which I will not take remuneration for. But on the issue, I know Jeff and I met with a gentleman from John Deere here in the city, John Deere Landscapes, and he has a product. Not only does he carry the
That's where I got mine.
Not only does he carry the irrigation that mm-hmm. Kristen was talking about, but he also carries a product that you can actually sprinkle in your landscaped areas to include your lawn. That will, it's like opening up the pores of your skin. It will allow a smaller amount of water to permeate more deeply into the root systems, and I think Farm Supply sells it as well. I have some of it. I'm going to give that a try as well. These are difficult times that we're in. We pretty much have to try everything because of the drought. But that's something that I'm going to experiment with and see if I can't, further reduce, my consumption. It's a tough situation, and did you want to add something, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, just since you're on that subject, I'd like to encourage everybody here and anybody watching to contact Kelly Heffernan at City Hall, who's the overall coordinator of our water conservation programs, and because of the actions the City Council took at the last meeting, we have a long list of different types of incentives, from turf removal and controllers and irrigation equipment, washing machines, plumbing retrofits. So we probably have the most comprehensive program around here, and so there's a lot of opportunities. We'd love to work with everybody to take advantage of those, and it can significantly reduce your water use.
The last thing I want to mention is that I strongly support moving ahead with this, with the caveat that we would do the three-year look-in, at least the three-year look-in, before we make that third bump to 3% and see where we are. And I'm hopeful that, again, given some of the variables associated with the planning assumptions, that we may not need that high of a bump. That's pretty much where I'm at on this issue as well. So with that, I will, if there's nothing else, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande establishing water rates and charges.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second discussion. Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay. Council is going to take a very short necessity break, and we will be back at 20 after the hour. Da, 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 da. Stand by on that. Okay, council is back in session, and we are going to begin our third public hearing. This is 9C, consideration of a resolution adjusting certain recreation fees set forth in the master fee schedule. And Debbie, you're going to do this one too?
I am. I don't have a PowerPoint for this one. It'll be pretty quick. As council is aware, the minimum wage laws are changing, and based predominantly on that change, we have an increased cost to our recreation programs, most specifically the child care program. And so we are here tonight to increase our fees for that program by approximately 25 cents per hour. We have done some analysis that we believe will this increase won't impact our participation rates. We've heard anecdotally from participants that this is a cost that doesn't exceed their ability to bear. You know, that's not scientific or anything, but just what we're hearing from participants is that 25 cent per
proposed tonight. And is your general sense, John, that it's not going to hurt enrollments? Okay. All right. I'll support this as well. I'll entertain a motion.
I move approval of a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adjusting certain recreation department operating fees set forth in the master fee schedule.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion on this item? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. All right, that takes us to item 11, new business, or I should say item 10, continued business. We have none. 11 is new business. 11A is consideration of an ordinance regarding state video franchises. Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. The city's franchise agreement with Charter Communications is due to expire on August 27th. The law has changed, though, and the city no longer has the authority to require a franchise agreement from a cable television, from the operator of the cable television system. That authority has been transferred to the State Public Utilities Commission. However, fortunately, the city does have the ability by ordinance to maintain the current 5% franchise fee and a 1% fee for public education and government access equipment. Together, those two things account for over $200,000 in annual revenue to the city. The city can also continue to require the existing public education and government access channels, which is in our case is one, and we can establish penalties for customer service violations. However, we no longer have the authority to establish the customer service standards. Those standards are established by the PUC now. Before you for consideration this evening is an ordinance that would enact these provisions and basically put in place the items that we are able to still regulate. And introduction of the ordinance this evening is respectfully recommended, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Question, Councilmember Brown.
I sent you an email, but I never got the answer, and that is, what do you think the anticipated additional cost might be to the city? Because that, from a prior communication we got, it seemed like that might be substantial.
Yeah, sorry. I wasn't able to get back to that last one before the meeting. Just to recap, so this ordinance basically protects the current revenue that we get. What it doesn't protect is the fact that under the current franchise agreement, the cable operator is required to provide free cable television service to city facilities, and we previously negotiated the installation of a fiber optic network known as an institutional network, or INET, which is just dedicated to city facilities. And so now that the franchise agreement will be expiring, they are no longer required to provide those services to us at no cost. We've gone over the cost for the cable television services is not significant. We only have it in a few locations in areas where we need to monitor council meetings in different people's offices. The INET, though, is a pretty significant impact to us, and they've given us estimates originally anywhere from $40,000 to $60,000 a year for the current system. So we've to try to reduce those costs. Our IT, Kelly and our IT manager is going through a number of steps. The first step was to go through the actual fiber network we have now and pare down to only the fibers we need. When it was built, we added additional fibers because we wanted to plan for growth. Now that we're having to pay for them, we're going to have to scale it down to just what we need right now. He thinks he can get that down to, you know, probably in the $30,000 range, 30 to 40. Meanwhile, there are other fiber providers, and we've contacted two of them. One that has just basic services that we might be able to get a little better rate from, and then there's a private company that's trying to install fiber optics in this area, and we're working creatively to try to determine if some abandoned pipelines and things we have that could be used for conduit could be traded off for installation of service to our facilities. So we think that's promising. And lastly, we're looking at wireless equipment in between some of the facilities that we think might, at least in the temporary, be able to substitute. So I think we'll come back with a plan that'll reduce that.
Councilmember Costello.
Steve, how much of this is a result of the change in the law and the way things were regulated before? And we're going to impose this fee. What if they say they're not going to pay it? What are the consequences? I mean, do we have any teeth behind this?
Well, it's all because of the change of the law. And then the law itself allows for these specific things for us to continue to require them by ordinance. So they would all be legally required. I wouldn't expect the cable operator not to comply with that. They've always complied with it under our franchise agreement.
And the current cable operator, my understanding, I heard this a week or two ago, is we're going to be swapped out because we're in an inconvenient area or something. So there'll be a different operator next year, I believe. Will that have any effect on this whatsoever?
We haven't really looked at it in detail, but normally when a new operator comes in, they're subject to the terms of the existing franchise agreement. That's part of the sale when they take over a company.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, this is not a public hearing, but if anyone would like to come forward on 11A, we'll give you an opportunity to do so. Anyone? Okay, seeing no takers, then we will bring this to the council and start with Councilmember Barnage.
I just had one more follow-up question. Is that okay?
What's that?
I had one more question.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Yep. So, Steve, the other options that you're looking into, and maybe another provider or maybe trading some of our areas that we have conduit, abandoning those so they can put conduit in. When do you think that we would have that information? A couple months, maybe?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the option. It'll probably be a phased approach. We'll probably have to begin with Charter, okay. Probably under some short-term arrangement.
Okay, that was my question. It's just I don't want to get into it with them if we can find another cheaper way to do it.
The wireless systems is something we probably, if we find they're feasible, could be up and running fairly soon.
Okay.
And then installing our own fiber or working with a private contractor doing that would take longer. So I think it'll be a phased approach.
Okay. And with Charter, we don't have to sign an agreement that's more than, you know, we could go month by month or something?
They have different options. The longer you sign on, the cheaper the cost.
Of course. Okay.
So the other thing we feel that once we have enough options in place, that'll give us a better negotiating position with
right.
Charter on those costs, too.
Okay.
So there's a lot of angles we're working on this. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. With those questions answered, I'm ready to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Brown?
I'm ready to move forward.
Okay. Councilmember Costello?
I'm also ready to move forward.
All right. And Mayor Pro Tem?
Me as well.
All right. I will make it unanimous and... We have a need for a motion to introduce
an ordinance.
Ordinance
of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adding Chapter 5.25 to Title 5 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code relating to state-issued cable television franchises.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, moving to item 12, City Council reports. I will go first. I was unable to make the SLOCOG meeting. Council Member Brown was nice enough to substitute for me. I had an out-of-town commitment that day. The South County Sanitation District did not meet on June the 4th, but we did meet on June the 18th. And... It was a fairly routine meeting. We took a look at our budget. The budget is on track. We have programmed out our redundancy to the plant. And even though the budget is balanced and we are moving forward, we still are having quite a bit of a challenge generating revenues for redundancy at the plant, as soon will be required by the state. Aside from that, the plant itself is operating well within the permit limits. Everything is going relatively smoothly there. The other thing that I want to mention, I might as well just get it in here now instead of during council communication, but I did attend last week a public safety policy committee in Sacramento for the League of California Cities, and there were a number of bills that were updated and also explained the League's position on several of them. The whole there's a particular
benchmarks that they deliver that we'll be able to review the EVC's programs and what progress they're making. I think it's a fairly unique way of measuring it and having this sort of third party. It's also a program that we're heavily involved in. I don't have any report on the California Joint Powers Insurance. I will say they're having their executive committee meeting here in July. It's down south. I won't be able to attend that, but I should have some report on the outcome of that. And that concludes mine.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, the APCD, or Pollution Control District, met, I believe it was last week, and essentially proceeding along, we're working with the state parks to try to initiate some sort of dust control measures, and they're getting ready to put something into play. They've been studying the issue for a while and had some sample techniques in play, and we're getting close to their actually putting something in the field. Interestingly enough, in doing a review of the APCD and their mission, the only thing that
we found to be lacking was the fact that we have low air quality. It's like 64 incidences in the year here in the South County, and several incidences in the far eastern part of the county. And those instances in the far eastern part of the county are air that's coming out of the Central Valley beyond our control. In terms of the Five Cities Fire Authority, I'd like to ask the council for consensus. We are currently getting ready to begin the process to recruit a new fire chief. As we, you know, we've gone through this twice. Mike Hubert is gone, and we have a couple of options. One, we can go with a headhunter firm that will recruit and find suitable applicants and bring those to us, and that period, that takes several months for that process to go through. And they'll help us do backgrounds on these people and review their qualifications and present us with a pool to work with and then go into the interview process. Or we can do it ourselves, save about $20,000 or so, give or take a few thousand dollars, and do the process ourselves. And it's projected that this would be a much faster process and probably not as thorough. And I'd like consensus on what the council thinks we should be doing.
Well, let me jump in here, and there's a bit more background. This was an item, and I think it was a meeting before Joe attended that he couldn't make, and I'm the alternate. And this was an item that was actually discussed in closed session, but we reported out of closed session. So I'm assuming I can share the results of the report. And the discussion was, first of all, there was unanimity on the part of the fire board at the time that we would do the process like we normally do for department head, and that is we would go to an outside personnel specialist like the ones that we have used on occasion. And I mentioned a couple of names. And everyone agreed that particularly with the focus lately that has been on the fire authority, that that was the direction that we wanted to go. We didn't want it to be considered a shortcut or a cronyism or a good old boy network or any of that kind of stuff. We wanted a neutral, objective process, even if it would cost the fire authority a little bit of money to do it. In terms of the way the process would materialize on the back end, it would be an interview board similar to what we do that could in fact convene from people from the three jurisdictions that could deal with a short list. But doing it that way would make it a completely objective process and a neutral process. So that's where we were with it. And then I guess at the following meeting, some of the costs came in, and there was a refocus on it. It's not that you don't have the 20 grand. Is that correct? You have it to spend. So anyway, with that as sort of the backdrop, I fully support the issue that we decided at the last meeting, and that was to go with the headhunter and make this a completely neutral process.
As do I.
Well, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask a quick question. What's the salary range of the fire chief?
I don't have that information.
Roughly at all?
I'm going to think it's probably somewhat comparable to the other public safety that we have. And it's probably
try to talk them into applying and so they have a good feel for who's out there that's looking around for jobs, and they have pretty good, you know, feedback since they've gone through other processes of who's good and who's not and what the issues are. So helps a lot in that aspect. And then they're just very experienced with the advertising. They know where to advertise. They create all the advertisements, and then they're
experts. What's the time frame on that, Steve?
Hmm?
What's the time frame on that process?
Normally they can. You know, another advantage is they'll meet with the board members and go through a whole interview process to find out what, you know, characteristics and things you're looking for. So that's a benefit. Put that together. and then into a brochure. That can take 2-3 weeks. Usually you want to have about 6 weeks for somebody to advertise and have people respond. There's a couple more weeks to review applications, a couple weeks to set up interviews, a couple more weeks for other interviews, and then the person usually gives a month's notice. So it's a good three, four-month process to go through it. But, you know, there are experts in all those steps, and when you get to the interview step, that's a pretty technical process, and there's a lot of laws that apply to that. So there's also benefits of having somebody with that background to make sure everything's being done properly so we don't get in any trouble later on also.
So that's how we've recruited our department heads with a headhunter?
Normally, I mean, since we have a human resources manager on staff, mm-hmm. sometimes we've done some of them in-house. Mm-hmm. Others we've used a headhunter for the full process. Mm-hmm. And then other times we've used a headhunter for part of the process and done some in-house. I think given the Five Cities Center with a very small staff, it's beneficial to them to have somebody doing the whole process.
Okay, and so that the cost is $20,000, is Joe?
That's roughly. That's what we got to quote.
Okay. Well, I would be in support of that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate the feedback.
Okay. Any other issues on your report?
No, sir.
Okay, Councilmember Brown.
Thank you. Integrated Waste hasn't met since our last time. I wasn't able to make the RAC meeting because it conflicted with SLOCOG, and I think Teresa was going to send a staff member, so I got to probably talk to her about what happened there. But in terms of SLOCOG, it was an eye-opener for me. Four-hour meeting. The biggest area that had to do with us was the 101 corridor and the fact that there's about 131 projects on the 101 corridor that they have to prioritize. So a lot of the discussion was about the model that they were going to use to prioritize these projects, and they had to be fair to the different jurisdictions in 101 to make sure they weren't all done in one area and they would be spread out. So it seemed to me they had the projects identified, they were going through this priority process, and so that they'll be spread throughout the county, and to make sure that everybody gets part of the projects involved. The only last thing I would say is I think Ron DeCarli's staff is amazing. He's got these young people that balanced a number of projects and a number of competing interests at the microphone and did an amazing job, and I was really impressed with that. Lastly, I went to the airport land use committee for Tony as well, and they did, in fact, unanimously appoint, I think his name is Bergmiller, if I remember correctly.
Birksmiller.
It was amazing the unanimous amount of support that he got, to the shock of a couple of the long-serving members of the committee. The one caveat was that one of the members had to be living in San Luis Obispo or close proximity to the airport. So former Mayor Suttle was almost by default had to be reappointed. And so Bergsmiller and Suttle, and then the supervisors will get their own choice to put some people on as well. But the gentleman was clearly enthusiastic, clearly knew what he was talking about, and it was a good session all the way around. So anyway, that's my report.
Okay, and I want to thank you again for
my pleasure.
Stepping into the breach there on two separate meetings.
My pleasure.
And then Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. Zone 3 Water Advisory Board has not met since we last reported. Homeless Services Coordinating Council has not met as well. Tourism Committee is meeting tomorrow. We did film the chicken thing on the swinging bridge.
Art committee, and Bob Lund and myself. And the purpose of our meeting was to focus on a formal ceremony for the mural. And right now we're looking at
a kind of a private ribbon cutting, which will take place at 3:30 in the afternoon on Friday, July 25th. And it will be city staff, city council, the village association, the board for the historical society, and a few others. And that will be a closed event. The media will be there. And so I'm hoping that all of you can make it. It's going to
date and time again, sir?
I'm sorry?
What was the date?
July 25th, 3:30. And then the following day, which is also the day of our car show, Saturday the 26th, we're going to have a kind of a public opening. And there will be an information desk there and handouts and brochures and information provided by the Public Art Committee. And so they will greet the public and explain the background and the nature on the mural. If you haven't seen it, it's on the east side of the old JJ's building, and it's absolutely wonderful. So there'll be more of a public outreach and announcement coming soon. Kelly's going to help out with putting a not only an invitation to the media, but a general media release to the public. We're hoping that we'll get not only a lot of our residents who will come down for the car show, but a lot of folks from out of town will come by. Some of them come from the Valley, and some of those cities have mural programs as well, so it'll be nice to get them to kind of visit. Any other communication announcements, suggestions? All right, staff communication, Steve, anything?
I can't think of anything except we had a good staff turnout for our filming of the video, and every single person did the chicken dance.
I'm not sure what that's. You're trying to make me feel bad. It's not working. Besides, I was hiding behind Jim,
yeah.
And Jim was only doing a halfway chicken dance.
He's only doing the camera side.
Please don't. Please don't. I was in front. They made me go in front.
Okay. Item 15 is our final community comments and suggestions. I know some folks have been waiting for that.
John Keene, 298 North Elm, and the mural is absolutely beautiful. Just spent several trips through the village just to see the mural. The Charter City. I didn't say anything because I thought there was going to be some discussion about the ballot question that Tony brought up. And I know it's too late, but something I need for us to all think about. When we keep saying municipal affairs, I know that there's an explanation, the very first article in the charter, municipal affairs. But when somebody just looks at that, they think, what the heck is that? They have no idea. And I've been going through this for a year, these meetings, and I still don't know exactly what municipal affairs are, because everybody, when you ask, they give you an example. But that doesn't cover everything that thing could cover. And I think it's important. I was hoping that we would really change it to this other option, the one that says to give full home rule powers instead of using the word municipal affairs, because that is more explanatory to somebody that's not familiar with what's going on. So anyway, I think now, since it's already passed, I think we need to do part of our education into what municipal affairs are, because somebody picks up the ballot to mark it and they're going to say, what the heck is a municipal affair? Thank you.
I can give you one example, John, that I suspect we probably will use in some of our outreach, and that comes straight from the Supreme Court decision when they ruled in favor of the city of Vista. And the judge in that case indicated that they could think of no better example of a municipal affair than allowing a city to determine how they spend their own money. So that's one example. I'm sure there are others. Okay, anyone else who would like to come forward? Okay.